Hello, everyone, and welcome to the October 2024 Logistics Pulse audio program, co-produced by Logistics Plus and Armada Corporate Intelligence. Thank you to our partners at WPSC Money Radio for recording and editing today's show. Today is Friday, October 18th, and our October Executive Supply Chain Bulletin was released and emailed to subscribers yesterday afternoon. I am Scott Frederick, the CMO for Logistics Plus, and with me is our regular guest and partner, Keith Prather, the Managing Director for Armada Corporate Intelligence. Hey, Keith, what is the difference between Thanksgiving Day and Election Day?
I have no idea.
Well, on Thanksgiving Day, you get a turkey for a day, but on Election Day, you get a turkey for 4 years.
There you go. So true.
Yes. Well, as you know, both Election Day and Thanksgiving are just around the corner. And the big economic question is, will consumers show up for their annual holiday spending this year? Keith, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The National Retail Federation just came out with their forecast, and they're showing 3.5% growth year over year, which is a pretty good growth rate. We see a lot of fear out there. I just talked to a bunch of executives yesterday, and they were telling me that, you know, they're getting a lot of weird consumer signals, consumers with a lot of debt and, you know, racking up, you know, credit card balances at almost historic credit card interest rates. But they still find a way to be resilient. We still find a way to continue to spend. And consumers have found that wherewithal. You know, we sometimes have to pay for that a little bit when we get into Q1, but we'll address it then. But it sounds like what we're going to get is a pretty robust peak season. People will still be celebrating. There's still going to be a lot of spending out there. I think retailers will do well. And I think we'll get a lot of sell-through. I think that'll be kind of critical this year for helping continue to reset the global supply chain. So general retailers, a lot of general merchandisers that do a lot of peak season retail sales are going into the season a little bit lighter than normal. We think they're about 2% lighter than they should be. Which doesn't sound like a lot, but if we do get that robust peak season, you know, 3.5% to, you know, 3.75% growth, then they're going to come out on the other side of this pretty light. And we'll see a little bit of a reset of the global supply chain, and we'll see activity really start to pick up. I think overall, it looks like, barring any kind of significant event, any kind of big announcements of layoffs, which we're not getting that right now, that it looks like it's going to be a pretty good peak season.
I noticed yesterday it was published that retail inventories are up a little bit as opposed to, you know, on their inventory to sales ratio. You think that's just them planning for hopefully a robust holiday season here?
Yeah, they were just up a little bit month over month, which is just getting ready for that seasonal impact. Yeah. But when we look at it historically, on a historical basis, they're still sitting light. Again, general merchandisers, which is what we watch the most kind of going into the peak, sitting well below their 10-year average prior to the pandemic. But even when I go, you know, almost 8% lower than they should be relative to that long-term average. But when I go back and look at them, you know, Scott, relative to August of like 2019, just to look at that one snapshot point in time, you know, kind of at the end of a normal supply chain cycle, we're still sitting, you know, 2 to 3% lighter than we were then. So we're going in lighter. And even if there was a little bit of a delay in the East Coast, I know we're going to talk about that in a minute. As that freight gets processed and we get it kind of into the system, we're just not hearing that there was these significant backlogs and delays. So I think a lot of the inventory readings that we got for August and as we go into September are pretty accurate relative to where we're going to be this year relative to where we were historically.
Yeah, we talked about a little bit last month in last month's bulletin as we were approaching the potential work stoppage on the East and Gulf ports. And it looks like we really dodged a big bullet there with the strike ending after only 3 days of a work stoppage. The tentative agreement has at least bought us some time until January 15th when it has to be approved again or solidified by that date. So as we approach the end of the year, any thoughts on the economic impact of that 3-day work stoppage? And, you know, do you think we'll see any issues from it?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because we have a lot of noise in, you know, what happened over the last 30 to 45 days because of the two hurricanes and the strike. And I honestly believe that, you know, we had probably some labor concern about Milton that was inbound during that strike. And I think that the union probably thought it was in everyone's best interest for them to at least get that preliminary wage agreement tentatively out of the way. And even though we still have, you know, the issues with automation and use of technology still hanging out there, and that could really rear its head as we get closer to January. But with that still hanging out there, I think it was good to put workers back to work to try and make sure that, you know, we had the critical supply chain linkages to help with hurricane recovery and emergency services. There's so many areas because of Hurricane Helene that were just so impacted and needed things as simple as just flats of water, you know, just absolute container after container after container of everything that they could get. And so those ports were critical to that recovery. And I think that's part of what happened. So it's tough. It was very cloudy. There were some estimates that we lost about $3 billion in work stoppage related delays for those 3 to 4 days that we were off. We know that the supply chain initially before Milton hit looked like it was going to take 3 to 4 weeks to kind of unravel and kind of get some of the backlogs and some of the ships that were stuck off the coast, you know, unloaded and, you know, that freight distributed. But then we had the hurricane impacts right behind it, which really kind of clouded things up. So again, I think the disruption was short term from the strike perspective. Now, when January looms, you know, I think as we get closer to January, if we're not hearing about a lot of progress with what's happening on the automation front of contract negotiations, then I do think that another looming work stoppage is probably in the cards for January or February.
Yeah, you brought up the two hurricanes that came through, and I was going to ask you whether you thought there was any economic impact on those two events as well. You kind of touched on it, but anything more to add there in terms of what that might do for economic conditions, at least in that part of the country?
Yeah, absolutely. And this one we could probably talk an hour about, so I'll just give you like three highlights. The first is that the estimates are still coming in, but we think somewhere between $100 and maybe $150 billion in damages looks like kind of where those two storms are going to net out. The second big thing is that inland distribution systems were still impacted. And I think it's a testament to really the robustness of modern supply chain networks that were able to do a lot of workarounds, because there were some bridges that were permanently damaged with some of the flooding activity that happened during Helene. But if you take a look at just the resilience of how quickly the supply chain adjusted, and, you know, companies like Logistics Plus helping companies really reroute and try to figure out how to work through a lot of those disruptions. I mean, that's just, again, a testament to where we're at today in modern supply chain management. We're largely not hearing of a lot of major impacts from inland distribution disruptions. We think that it's streamlined and it's worked its way back to the point where we've got some reliable transit time expectations out there. I mean, we're doing, you know, ground-based trucking or rail or whatever it is. But the impacts are still, you know, wide-ranging, and it's going to take months, if not years, to really fully understand the impact as we start to see commodities flow into the region for immediate emergency relief. And then as that transitions into reconstruction and rebuilding, that entire Southeast corridor, roughly 7 states, had enough damage, it's going to create a long-term reconstruction type of environment down there. So the supply chain activity down the Southeast is going to be robust for quite a while. You know, and then the last piece of this whole puzzle is just going to be whether this changes any national distribution patterns. I don't think it will have that kind of lasting impact. We still see a lot of industrial site location activity taking place where companies are looking for a place to put new manufacturing. And right now, areas in the Southeast, especially Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, those are still prime locations. And I don't know that these two storms really overall impact future planning. It's now a consideration, but I don't think it's necessarily there. And the only last thing I'll say, Scott, is that every time we have a disaster like this, we always uncover real supply chain bottlenecks. And this set of storms really did that for us in a couple areas. One is, you know, we learned that we have 85% of our national IV liquid base tied up in two facilities down in Florida and Georgia. And, you know, it's created a bit of a national crisis for hospital IV availability. And we're working through it, and it looks like we're going to get around this okay. But I mean, coming out of this, there'll have to be some changes. And there's going to be some other supply chain bottlenecks that were discovered during the same period of time. So it'll just be interesting to see what else erupts and what else sort of develops as we go through the next couple of months overall.
Yeah, good insights. Thanks for sharing that, Keith. You also mentioned, you know, Logistics Plus involvement in working with customers to reroute freight and some of the work we're doing in that area. I do want to give a quick shout out to Gretchen Seth, who is our senior vice president. She's a longtime volunteer with the Red Cross organization. And actually, right after Hurricane Helene came through, she actually volunteered and took an emergency response vehicle down to the southeast area, North Carolina, Asheville, North Carolina area. And she's been down there ever since, just volunteering, providing food and any other kind of assistance to those devastated. And been sharing some of the photographs and whatnot of what's gone on down there. It is pretty sad and how hard some of those areas have been hit. But anyway, we appreciate all of her volunteer efforts and all the other volunteers that are chipping in to do what they can to help those folks out as well. So,
well, and that's fantastic. And I know also, I mean, Logistics Plus, you guys respond all over the world. And I think this is a critical point to make. And I know you won't talk about it that much because you're all, you know, way too honest and all, you know, you're too modest to be able to do a lot of that discussion. But yeah, I mean, your crisis response activity around the world, chartering aircraft to get emergency supplies into a lot of different areas, is a lot of work that goes unheralded. And you're really outstanding in that capacity. So just going to pat you all on the back and say fantastic job. So,
oh, thanks, Keith. The good news for supply chain managers as we close out the year is that according to the Fed's latest producer price indices, transportation costs for ground modes, at least anyway, seem to be moderating. We see that truckload, LTL, and parcel rates are actually all three down slightly on a month-over-month basis. LTL parcel is still up a bit on a year-over-year basis, but again, we're seeing that downward trend as we come close out the year. Air, ocean, and warehousing prices, however, did inch up slightly in September. Keith, any thoughts on the state of transportation costs as we finish out Q4 of 2024 here?
Yeah, I mean, I think generally we are seeing everything take a breather kind of headed into the end of the year. I do think a lot of companies did move merchandise into the U.S. early for the peak. So I think in Q2, we saw a little bit of that activity. Q3, we definitely saw that. And so I think we're going to have a little bit of traditional sluggishness toward the end of the year. I think intermodal still does a little bit better. We still see some pretty good forecasts for November and December inbound activity, somewhere around 1.9, 1.8 million TEUs, still probably bumping shores in November and December. So it's still going to create a little bit of intermodal activity. But overall, I think that we are moving into a period where the industry is going to take a breather. Prices are going to stay moderated, as you said. And I don't know that we're going to have any real sharp spikes. I know air cargo is an area where, just because of the inventory situation that we talked about earlier, I still think that there is a lot of use of expedited air cargo, you know, moving a pallet or two pallets by air from Asia or wherever it's coming from internationally into the U.S. instead of bringing a full container in. So we're, you know, just short filling a lot of stock outs. And I think that that will continue for quite a while. And then we still have those emergency supplies and that kind of relief effort going on in a lot of, obviously, the Southeast. And so that's going to continue to drive air cargo rates. So I think those will remain elevated at least till the end of the year. But I think other modes, I think even warehousing starts to slow down a little bit before we really start to see a re-energizing of the supply chain, probably a little bit late in the next cycle. So we're probably looking at the end of Q1. So I have a little bit of sluggishness in January and February as consumers kind of pay down the debt that they are going to rack up over the next couple months. And then we kind of get into the end of Q1 and Q2. And I think it could be a little more robust than we had last year. And then I think you see kind of building into a normal peak cycle next year for the first time in, you know, quite a few years. So optimistically, I think for carriers and for shippers both, I think it looks like a fairly balanced environment headed through the end of the year and early into next. And then I think we all get a lot busier as we go through much of 2025.
Before we leave the transportation mode discussion, ocean and container rates, as we know, continue to be impacted by the rebel strikes in the Red Sea. However, it seems that the U.S. military is starting to assert more pressure in that region, which may free up some commercial maritime capacity. What is Armada's updated intel on the Red Sea situation?
Yeah, what you're referring to, we did put in the briefing, and it happened, it was fresh when we wrote about it in the briefing, but we sent B-2 bombers and B-2s, struck five major areas inside Yemen that were strongholds and weapons depots for the Houthi rebels. And a lot of this material was the material that was being used to, you know, strike commercial maritime, you know, ships moving up and down the Red Sea. So it's interesting because we don't know exactly how much of their capacity those five strikes took out. but we had surveilled it long enough that we had some really good intelligence on where their major stockpiles were. So that's going to hurt their capacity to be able to conduct further strikes in the future. It doesn't mean they're going to stop. But also, what it does is for the first time, it really puts the US on offense. And the fact that we did those strikes says that if we do get additional strikes in the future, probably we'll go on offense again and probably conduct more aggressive strikes. It's almost like the US and some NATO partners have said, okay, enough's enough. We're going to shut this down. We're going to stop this. So I don't know that insurance companies, that'll be the big critical point, is when insurance firms agree that they have low enough risk that they can start bonding and covering ships moving through the Red Sea again. And so we may start to see some softening of that as we get toward the end of the year, especially if the strikes from the Houthis really start to pull back and start to slow down. I know Iran right now is very concerned about an Israeli response to their earlier barrage last month. And I think they're hanging on to a lot of their armament right now. And that's the primary source for the Houthi rebels, as they get a lot of the weaponry from Iran. So I don't know that the Houthis will get a lot of backfilling of munitions and missiles and drones and the things that they've been using to strike commercial vessels. So if the US took out 70 or 80% of their stockpiles, that's a significant development. That's a significant change. So whether we're seeing Q1 or Q2, a reopening of the Red Sea, and we see global capacity, remember we talked about it for many months, but we think 20 to 25% of the global capacity got stripped out of the global maritime sector because freight's just staying on water a lot longer. And if we do get the Red Sea opening back up, then you kind of get that reverse effect. You get these quicker turns by the shipping community. And so we do see maritime capacity possibly opening up by mid-year next year. So we could see some softening of maritime prices and a little more competition, a little more available capacity as we kind of get into the second half of 2025.
Well, good news, something to keep watching there. And obviously, any relief in the Red Sea situation would be welcome news to the shipping community. So, again, we'll keep an eye on that. Keith, my last question of the day relates to the state of global manufacturing, and it's a bit loaded, but I know this is something you are watching closely. As we look at global manufacturing trends, the strength of the US dollar, and recent government stimulus activity in China, what are you seeing big picture wise for the global economy?
It's kind of interesting because the global manufacturing picture is about as cloudy as it could possibly be. We've got so many different cross currents, and I know we've said that a lot, but I think in manufacturing specifically, we're kind of going through that phase right now. There are some pockets like India, Brazil, Singapore, where the manufacturing sectors are moving at such a fast pace, they can't keep pace with demand. A lot of that's domestically driven, but a lot of it is that they have captured so much market share and global sourcing that they're producing as fast as they can produce. But it's created, obviously, mild secular manufacturing recessions in other parts of the world. The other thing that we have going is that we talk a lot about conflict, but if we look at it realistically, there's been $2 to $3 trillion in damages created by global conflict over the last 3 years. And that and earthquakes and some of the big major disasters we've had, like in the Turkey region, some of that reconstruction activity has already started. And as you start to see a lot of global commodities flying into those markets, plus a little bit of pickup in other global manufacturing, it looks like, again, we keep pointing to 2025, but it looks like there could be a global catalyst of growth that could really start to pick up the global economy. We see manufacturing start to rebound. So the sluggishness that global manufacturing has been in for the last year, I think, starts to lift and we start to see some improvements next year. Most of the surveys that we look at, Scott, is we look at the sentiment of manufacturers. Almost all of them are getting signals that their volumes are going to be a little bit stronger in 2025 and that they see recovery in 2025. We know the services side of all of those economies, which is about 60 to 70% of their GDP, continue to be very strong. So it's not a global recession. People are still gainfully employed. People are, households are still growing wealth. They're still spending, but they're spending on experiences and, entertainment and that side of the economy. But it feels like there's a lot of mechanism that starts to ignite and kind of get the manufacturing side of the global economy to kind of come up and start to match that a little bit. And so it's a cycle change of something new. And right now, we don't see it in the data. Right now, things are still sluggish on the manufacturing front. I'm just saying that it looks like there's enough tailwinds building that I think you could see, you know, better activity in 2025. And we could get to June of next year and we may look back and say, man, Keith, you couldn't have been more wrong on all this stuff. You totally missed. But I think that would be the surprise at this point.
Well, I hope you're right, Keith. So we'll have to keep an eye on that as well. This is really our last update before Election Tuesday. And so as we wrap up here, I'll ask you one last time, any election predictions?
I've resisted all this time. And I'm just going to say right now that I feel like if you look at Wall Street, and which I'm watching the closest, you look at Wall Street futures, there's a lot of bias right now toward maybe the Republicans grabbing a little more control of Congress. I don't know that it means a clean sweep or a big wave or anything like that. But I do think that conditions are leaning a little bit favorably toward the Republican side, maybe controlling more of what happens in Congress. That's the critical juncture. I do know that in the last couple of days, and you've all seen the same national media that I have, that former President Trump is gaining momentum in a lot of key battleground states. And so Wall Street is starting to play and starting to plan for what would look like maybe a Trump victory. And, you know, whether that happens or not, we'll see. Polls are historically wrong. I mean, it just, I'd probably have a better chance of, you know, running some kind of an online poll and, you know, getting a little better results than what I see nationally from some of the big pollsters. But that feels like where the momentum is right now. Again, we're still in October. You can always get an October surprise. I don't think we've had one yet. So that could still be coming and it could push it either way. But things are tight. I think that's probably the best way to say it. Things are tight. And I'll continue to say that. I just tell everyone like everyone else has, just get out and vote. Just make your opinion known, whatever it is, right?
Yep. Well, I'm sure we'll have some interesting stuff to talk about next time around. So as we close out today's program, I do want to call out on the last page of this month's bulletin, we do have a couple links to some really good business spotlight interviews that were done with a couple of our employees. Chris Dennis, who's our Managing Director of Logistics Plus Canada, and Gretchen Blau, who's our Customs Brokerage Manager. Again, both those interviews were recorded and edited by our friends at WPSC Money Radio and really good content there. So encourage everybody to go to the LP Radio podcast on Spotify or on our website and check those out. Otherwise, just one last reminder that, again, if you do want to view our current issue of the Logistics Pulse, you can visit logisticsplus.com/logisticspulse. Again, you'll find our October issue there that you can click and read and subscribe to future issues if you want. Logistics Pulse is a complimentary value-added intelligence briefing for Logistics Plus customers, partners, and prospects. So until next time, be sure to keep your finger on the pulse of logistics.